to my dearest friends. I am honored to welcome you back once more for today's investigation into the horrors which lurk amidst the darkest shadows of our galaxy's every corner. When we peer out into the intergalactic void, it may at first appear as an endless ocean of sheer nothingness, an abyss beyond compare, dotted only by the fading light of a billion distant galaxies, too far to ever reach and too far to ever claim. Yet, it is an unfortunate truth that this void is, in fact, not devoid of life. In recent millennia, the ever-devouring swarms of the Tyranid Menace have probed the undefended corners of the Milky Way, with the great hive fleets intruding upon any world they encounter, caring not if they were once ruled by man, alien, nor machine. There are some people who have fostered a false sense of relief from knowing that since the fleets are primarily invading from the outer reaches of the galaxy, with the exception of Leviathan, of course, that they will be safe within the defended bosom of the galactic interior. These people, however, would be terribly, terribly wrong. The Tyranids may invade as an unrelenting tide, at first appearing as aimless and mindless beasts, but we have since learned that they are oftentimes lured towards specific worlds, worlds which have been conquered from within by the insidious groups known as the Gene Stealer Cults. In brief, these are sects of individuals who have been enthralled by the psychic song of a Gene Stealer patriarch, compelling them to grow and spread their influence across the entirety of the world, eventually culminating in the cultists seizing power in what is often a bloody and violent uprising. The awakened cult will then signal to the distant Tyranid fleets, causing them to redirect their devouring onslaught, now to be honed in on a world which is confirmed to be rich in an enticing buffet of toothsome biomass. The cultists, who foolishly believe that the Tyranid gods will embrace them, will not be spared. And in actuality, they will be mashed, mangled, and masticated by the swarms of gaunts, with their precious biomass to be dissolved and subsumed within the grotesque feeding pools. But such is life for those who fall victim to the manipulative promises of a starved alien hive mind. Nevertheless, most people who know of the Gene Stealer cults are only aware of their existence upon imperial worlds, where they target human populations, when in actual fact the Gene Stealers may target and infest near every species found within the galaxy. The enigmatic Eldari, barbarous orcs, upstart Tau, all entirely distinct from one another, yet all susceptible to the siren song of the Gene Stealer, lulling them into the belief that their true gods lurk far beyond the light of the stars and out in the eternal night of the void. Perhaps the only faction thus far known to be entirely free from the clutches of the Gene Stealers would be of the Necrons, though it is hardly surprising that the soulless machines are immune to a foe which launches its first attack against one's very biology. But with this in mind, I do believe that it is now time for us to begin. We will be traveling throughout the stars, moving from imperial hives to craft worlds, then to the Orc tribes, and finally to the septs of the Tau Empire, as we learn of how the Gene Stealer cults may infiltrate and defile every species of the galaxy. Humanity, and therefore the wider Imperium, are easily to be considered as the most common targets for the Gene Stealer cults to infest, and this can be put down to a multitude of reasons. For one thing, The Imperium is made up of a million worlds, interconnected by the vast logistical network of the Imperial fleet, shuttling countless civilians and military personnel throughout the galaxy. Though intended for transporting supplies or soldiers, the naval vessels can easily be infiltrated by stowaway gene stealers who will enter into a dormant state before emerging from slumber upon their destined world, eager to set out and to form the foundations of a new cult. This will be a relatively easy task for the Patriarch, as most Imperial worlds will be home to a rather healthy population of humans, many of whom may live within the unwatched outskirts of their society. For instance, though a hive world may boast a prodigious populace numbering in the billions, many of these citizens will be classified as simple workers, condemned to live within the lightless bowels of the hive, where very few officials will ever bother to tread. Similarly, out on a frontier world, perhaps designated for mining operations, it is not uncommon to find cramped worker habs situated far from the domain of the planetary governors, surrounded by a notable atmosphere of oppression and dissatisfaction. Naturally, it would be quite easy for any anti-imperial movement to take root within the downtrodden populace of such an area, and very few would be willing to report on their peers out of fear of being similarly branded and condemned for heresy. Now, the dissident factions can take many forms, sometimes consisting of destructive hive gangs, tainted worshippers to the ruinous powers, or even of insurgent sects who wish to one day bring their world into the fold of the greater good. Yet the gene stealers do have a fair few advantages, which will aid them in converting their innocent victims into prospective cultists. Firstly, to join with the aforementioned groups, one will almost always need some semblance of personal motivation. But this is not to be the case for the gene stealer cults. Those within the cult will have been silently swayed by the psychic song of the gene stealer, lulling them into the false belief that their world requires liberation, and spurring them into action to bring this scenario into reality. Thankfully, most humans, whether they know it or not, have at least a very minor connection to the warp, and though it might not grant them with any powers, it does act as a vulnerability which the gene stealer may exploit. This brood mind is quite hard to detect, especially within a bustling hive city. And in fact, many psychers will fail to notice a burgeoning cult until, of course, it is far too late. This is another important point to note, and it is that the Imperium is woefully inefficient at almost any endeavor, with the layers of paranoid bureaucracy doing little but to slow the administratum down to a frustratingly pathetic crawl. But because of this, reports on potential cult activity will often go unchecked for years at a time, unless, of course, they so happen to be reviewed by an inquisitor or member of the Death Watch, in which case their retribution will be swift and absolute. We should also acknowledge that it can be quite tricky for an Imperial citizen to actually notice a cult, partly due to their innate secrecy, but also because their practices are often so subtle that one may simply assume that they are following in a variation of the Imperial faith, and nothing more. For instance, the cult of the Star Kindred will outwardly claim to worship their parental star, with its blazing light representing the inescapable truth of the Emperor, illuminating the darkness of the Glepted Reach. This all sounds well and good, but in actual fact, the cultists secretly detest the light, worshipping instead the darkness found beyond the stars. And they await the day when the glorious abyss swallows up their nearby sun, leaving naught but the truth to shine dimly through the void. Also, Once a cult reaches a certain level of maturity, its hybrids will be almost entirely indistinguishable from a regular human, allowing them to completely blend with the wider society, though many will still choose to conceal themselves with large coats or robes. This typically occurs for the fourth generation of hybrids, and it usually sparks the most aggressive phase of the cult's expansion, since they will then be able to emerge from the shadows, not necessarily to attack, but simply to grow their influence and to covertly seize more significant and more powerful posts. As an interesting point, almost every gene-stealer cult was first formed by the introduction of a single gene-stealer bioform, most often transmitted as a stowaway. But it can be quite unsettling to consider how many worlds have fallen just because of the infiltration of but a single alien. It can also be quite worrying to look upon the life cycle of a cult and to notice that once one has secretly taken root, that the planet is essentially doomed. Unless the patriarch and their first generation hybrids are snuffed out immediately, then it will only take them a relatively short time to spread through their society, planting cultists in near every prominent position, often including that of the planetary governor. While it would still be possible for an imperial army to descend and to purge the city, it would be a monumental task to assess every single survivor and to determine if they are truly faithful to the Imperium or if they are double agents still serving the wishes of the cult. Therefore, the Imperium must be merciless with its treatment of infested worlds, condemning them just as they would for a planet consumed by chaos, in that they must be entirely cleansed by the fires of an exterminatus. Though this may seem brutal, we must realize that if a cult is left to its own devices, then it will quickly topple the planetary order, quietly establishing itself as the sole rulers to their world, completely unbeknownst to the wider Imperium. It may then continue to spread through the local system, disseminating scores of pure-strain gene-stealers aboard inconspicuous vessels to expand their cult far and wide before the day of ascension can finally be reached. The Death Watch has officially classified around 6 major cults within the galaxy, but in truth, this classification is rather dated, and as it stands today, there are thousands of unique groups dotted throughout the stars, silently growing and silently poisoning the Imperium from within. Contrary to popular belief, the Gene Stealers can also infest the ancient Eldari and fallen Drukhari, though it can prove to be quite a bit more challenging for them to do so. Their kind find themselves in a rather precarious position within the 41st millennium, as despite the fact that they once ruled over the stars, they now teeter dangerously close to the precipice of destruction and even extinction. Yet, if their ancient flame is ever destined to be extinguished from our galaxy, I do not believe that the Gene Stealer cults will have played any role nor even influenced the fall. The Eldar pose a series of unique and truly troublesome challenges to the Gene Stealers, which have thus far protected near every craft world from infiltration, though we do have one notable exception to this rule to cover soon. To begin with, the Eldari species is highly sensitive to the psychic currents of the warp, meaning that most every individual will hold at least some latent psionic ability. As a result of this, the Eldar will be acutely sensitive to the emotional changes in their fellows, and as an interesting point, many of their kind will choose to communicate at least partially via telepathy aboard their craft worlds. Thus, it will be extraordinarily difficult for an Eldari cultist to conceal their true intentions if their peers can sense the seditious thoughts brewing within their subconscious. It could be argued that the Genestealer broodmind may shield the minds of its cultists, partitioning these thoughts away during certain situations, therefore allowing them to more easily blend with the wider craft world. With that said, the Farseers and Warlocks of the Eldari are some of the most potent psykers in the galaxy. And so, I personally believe that they would be able to see through this shroud, or at least to piece together that the obfuscation must mean that something insidious is afoot. We would also need to think about the Genestealer Patriarch himself, hiding away aboard the craft world, and that surely the Eldar would be able to sense the presence of this great beast. Though again, maybe the creature will project a localized version of the shadow in the warp, helping to conceal the psychic activities of the cult as they spread through the craft world. Alternatively, since the craft worlds are built out of the psychically conductive wraith bone, maybe the Broodlord will tap into the very vessels themselves, using it as a way to spread his psychic dampening to every corner of the craft. Regardless, the psychic component is just one challenge to overcome. But there is another which cannot be overstated, and it relates to the life cycle of the Eldari themselves. For a cult to expand, new generations of hybrids must be born, but the cultist offspring will still grow according to the biology of the host species. So with humanity, for instance, it might take around 20 to 30 years between each generation. But for the Eldari, their species grow incredibly slowly, with their gestation periods sometimes lasting several years. And though we do not know of the exact time it takes to reach adolescence, we could presume that it potentially lasts for several times longer than of a human. They only begin to consider one as being old, in the venerable sense, once they reach an age of around 1500 years. So, I don't believe it as being too far-fetched to think that they will only become adults somewhere between 50 to 100 years old, though this is only my own speculation. In any case, this naturally means that the time between Genestealer cult generations will be extremely long, with there perhaps being several centuries before a new generation comes into existence. This then provides the Eldar with far more time to root out and purge the Patriarch, who will need to remain active and alert for hundreds of years, never slipping up once, lest it lead to their untimely demise. It could be argued that the establishment of a cult would be easier in Komorar, since the Drukhari will accelerate their own growth by mass-producing new offspring within disgusting wall-mounted gestation pods. But then again, this is all overseen by the homunculus covens, who would be quick to notice any aberrant genetic material, prompting them to abduct and experiment upon the mutant, almost assuredly leading to the discovery of the cult. In any case, back to the Asuriani, the ultimate goal of an Eldari Genestealer cult would likely be to overtake an entire craft world before leading it to a Tyranid fleet to be devoured. But even if that were achieved, it's not actually a very enviable victory. We have no real way of knowing the total populace of a craft world, but a reasonable estimate would equate their population to that of a hive city, so ranging into the billions for a large craft world, and perhaps only hundreds or tens of millions for a small one. This might sound impressive, considering that all of their kind are highly specialized, but when the Tyranids consume a world, most of the biomass they absorb comes from the planet's ecology. So the soil, oceans, and natural environments with the animal mass contributing a relatively insignificant portion. Therefore, since a craft world is constructed out of artificial wraith bone, the only real sources of biomass will come from the Eldari themselves. So the Tyranids wouldn't actually be gaining all that much when compared to the biomass available on a natural world. Still, perhaps an infected craft world could be used to spread gene-stealer cultists down to the elusive Exodite worlds, which would indeed be a succulent prize for the Tyranids to consume. So far, we have only encountered one craft world which was successfully overrun by a gene-stealer cult, and it would be the vessel known as the Zaisuthra. The story reads that the Eldari, who fled from the cataclysmic birth of Slaanesh aboard this craft, did not follow the path of the Asuriani, and rather, they continued to worship the old, though now deceased, gods of their pantheon. According to the Eldari mythos, this craft world contained the Gate of Malice, which supposedly led directly to the tomb of Eldanesh, favored child of the gods and central figure to the legendary war in heaven fought between the mortal Eldari and the war god Cain. Tragically, despite its hallowed contents, the craft world was discovered in the 42nd millennium to have been entirely corrupted by a gene-stealer cult, with their collective broodmind protecting the Eldari hybrids from the grasping reaches of Slaanesh. In the end, a war host of the Inari purged the fallen craft world, eventually discovering that the patriarch seemed to have mutated into an abominable hybrid of the Avatar of Cain and of a Tyranid monstrosity. Though successful in destroying the cult, it doesn't change the fact that the gene stealers were able to usurp control over what should have been impervious. And if one craft world can fall, then maybe despite the odds, will the hybrids topple the rest? But as we discussed, there isn't too much to gain from the consumption of a single craft world. And maybe instead, the greatest prize would be of their newfound connection to the labyrinthine realm of the Webway. Hypothetically, the gene stealers could use the many portals across a conquered craft world to spread through the galaxy, secretly emerging upon countless worlds, sowing the seeds of corruption so that their cult may blossom through the stars and draw the Tyranids in for a feast beyond compare. Now to cover a species which is perhaps the polar opposite of the Eldari, let us look towards the green-skinned menace of the Orcs. It's almost ridiculous to imagine a gene-stealer cult emerging within an Orc tribe, and yet time and time again we have identified four-armed brutes who appear slightly more purple than green. In many ways, the Patriarch will actually find it quite easy to first infiltrate an Orc tribe, as the Greenskins are famously quite dim-witted, so in all likelihoods, they won't be on the lookout for a great alien horror, stalking through the shadows of their shanty camp. Also, orcs will gestate and grow fairly quickly from their fungal spores, meaning that successive generations will develop to full maturity in short order, allowing the cult to rapidly accelerate to its terminal stage, and to set about the organization of its rebellious uprising. As a final positive point, since all orcs know that bigger is better, the larger orc hybrids will be quick to rise in their pecking order, possibly leading to an orc cultist claiming the mantle of war boss. Though naturally, this should really belong to the Patriarch. But with all that said, I actually believe that these three points exist as double-edged swords, which in fact make it far harder for the gene stealers to firmly take root within a tribe. For starters, yes, the orcs are quite slow to grasp new concepts, but this doesn't necessarily make them stupid, nor oblivious to their surrounding environments. Orcs typically live fairly simple lives, with their time spent sleeping, eating, and generally preparing for a fight. So if a boy suddenly starts acting strange and shying away from these activities, then the rest of the tribe will immediately sense that something is up with the curious git. The Greenskins are really not a fan of anyone who acts un-orky, and their usual remedy will be to clobber the boy over the head until he starts acting normal again, or to at least put him in the dirt so he can finally stop bothering them. It's usually at this point where they notice mid-brawl that the un-orky boy isn't looking all that green, further evidence to justify the bloody beating. Now, the dullards of a tribe might be slow to notice their mates being slightly purple, but the odd boys, such as the mechs or mad docs, are often somewhat more intelligent, and they will readily point out the freak as soon as they lay eyes on them. This will similarly prompt a mortal beating, since in an orc camp, green is best, and Gork forbid you go against this rule. Of course, some orc cultists will quickly blabber that it's actually a war paint, but purple is a very untrustworthy color, so this isn't a particularly valid defense. But anyway, aside from the visual and social cues of the cultists being a dead giveaway, we've also got to think about the orc life cycle, which, as I mentioned, is remarkably fast. It only takes around a year for a spore to settle and to mature into an orc youth who will be quite inexperienced, but strong enough to join in a war and to get stuck in with all the fighting. But the problem here is that the gene stealer cults often need to bide their time so as to fully integrate themselves with the wider society. Yet their successive generations will appear so quickly that the cult will be too disorganized to effectively stage an uprising once they reach their terminal phase. I should also mention that it is extraordinarily difficult to hide out in an orc camp without being discovered. It's a relatively simple challenge for a gene stealer to find a lair within a gigantic hive world or out in some dank cave upon an industrial world. But in an orc society, there's rarely to be found any form of abandoned building to dwell within. There are always new boys coming and going, claiming new shanty shacks and dilapidated lean-tos for themselves, so it won't take all that long for the patriarch to be awkwardly caught, postured up in the basement of a very angry mech, who could have sworn he left his bumbling apprentice down there. Also, bands of grots will scurry through every crevice and crack of an orc town, mainly to look for a place to skive off, and if they spy the nightmarish sight of a gene-stealer patriarch feasting upon some poor boy, then they'll quickly run off, screaming for dear life of the alien interloper. Thus, it's all very difficult for a gene-stealer cult to establish itself in an orc populace, but that doesn't mean that it isn't possible. As I said, the orcs see size and strength as being reasons enough to justify one's ascension to war boss. So if a rather large orc gene-stealer hybrid were to appear, then it would simply have to challenge the current war boss to a fight and hopefully emerge victorious. The rest of the boys, though, still might be a bit too put off by his strange talons and not entirely green skin. So at this point, they'll rise up themselves against the freakish boss, smashing his face open just to claim his unusually sharp teeth. Though in this scenario, the orcs reject the rising cultists, we do know of some cases where a gene-stealer cult has successfully established itself at the head of an orc tribe, the most notable actually occurring during the dreadful war for the Octarius sector. The legendary Inquisitor Cryptman had orchestrated this conflict by leading a major tendril of Hive Fleet Leviathan towards the orc empire of Octarius, hoping it would lead to their mutual destruction. Unfortunately, however, this war continued to grow, eventually spilling over to impact several nearby worlds, necessitating the deployment of Imperial forces to contain the outer reaches of the system. Upon one such planet, being a scrap world known as Dakka, the Vostroyan Firstborn were sent to contain the Orc threat, though upon landing, they made a most horrifying discovery. A monstrous six-armed gargant was found stomping towards their defensive lines, but as the claw beast opened up its great belly, a disgusting clutch of Orc Genestealer hybrids scurried out, spilling out across the field, eviscerating the guard before scuttling back into the safety of their scrap-built hive. Turning our attention to the galactic east, we will find the fledgling consortium of worlds, making up the Metropolitan Society of the Tau Empire. Consisting of dozens of well-populated planets, situated fairly close to each other, we could safely say that this would be an excellent target for the Tyranids to consume, as there is a healthy trove of diverse biomass upon each world, simply ripe for the taking. Thus, it would make a lot of sense for there to be an attempt at infiltrating their empire with the Genestealer cults, but unfortunately, the Tau, though quite new to the galactic scene, possess a number of barriers and obstacles, which makes their corruption incredibly difficult. For one thing, at the core of their society, we will find the caste system, which posits that every Tau should belong to one of five castes, where they will work on specialized tasks according to their societal need. With the Fire Caste, for instance, being the military branch of the Empire. But herein lies the problem, as the castes are highly segregated, with there being absolutely no room for a Tau to switch castes or to closely mingle with individuals from another caste, unless, of course, it is necessary for their given task. Because of this, if a Genestealer cult was successfully formed, perhaps in the Air Caste, then it would be very much confined to those lithe Tau, as it would be most suspicious for an Air Caste member to suddenly choose to intimately mix with the surface dwellers below. Also, it is forbidden for members of different castes to become romantically engaged with one another, so any offspring from the cultists would be constrained to their own caste, thereby restraining the reach of the subsequent generations. At most, we could perhaps envisage a successful cult gaining control of an entire caste, but even that seems a bit too far-fetched for me to believe. Still, maybe a successful patriarch would initially abduct a number of Tau from every caste, hopefully seeding the cult throughout every arm of their society, perhaps making future proliferative and infiltrative plans far easier. But also, if the patriarch first targeted a member of the ethereal caste and was able to sway them into the cult, then this could rapidly spell the ultimate doom of the world. The ethereals rule as the spiritual and political leaders of the Tau Empire, with the rest of their species following along with near every order, which some have speculated as being down to an element of psychic control. Therefore, an ethereal hybrid could potentially accelerate the growth of the cult by ordering for cross-caste integrations, probably held under the guise of cooperation, when in actuality it would be used to infect the other castes with the Genestealer's kiss. With that said, the Tau Empire is united by the teachings of the greater good, so if the cultists display any practices which go against this philosophy, then they will be singled out to be re-indoctrinated, at which point they would be quickly identified as an alien agent. As an extension of this point, the Tau worlds are integrated with some rather advanced technologies, including swarms of monitoring drones, which would be quick to identify the presence of a Genestealer lair. even if it was secluded in the heart of one of their cities. Also, I mentioned the unusual control that the Ethereals hold over their peers, and though we have no way of knowing for sure, we must wonder if this would be enough to overcome the psychic command of the Patriarch, possibly compelling a cultist to reveal their actions and prompting the end of the cult. As an interesting theory, I would wonder if an intelligent Patriarch would seek to subvert the teachings of the greater good, perverting it in such a way to bring the Tao closer together before they spread out through the world, to bring the good word of the cult far and wide. Another challenge behind infiltrating the Tao Empire would relate to their integration of the client species. These are aliens who have accepted the Tao philosophy and who now live within their societies as equals. But much like with the castes, they aren't permitted to mingle too closely with the dominant Tao. This means that the Gene Stealer Patriarch would also need to separately target the client species, possibly leading to the emergence of several distinct cults across a world, each populated by a different alien group, though all subservient to the presiding Brood Lord. It might even be easier to target the client species by fostering the idea that they are being persecuted by the Tao overlords and that they are considered as chattel labor who should now rise up in rebellion to overthrow the yoke of ethereal oppression. Though potentially applicable for a number of the alien races, this idea would certainly not work for the Kroot, who are intimately tied and deeply devoted to their Tao allies. In addition, thanks to their abilities in gene shaping, the Kroot are able to selectively choose which genes they express, so an afflicted Kroot could simply suppress the Tyranid genes, thereby making them not quite immune, but highly resistant to falling as a hybrid. Also, the Kroot are quite disgusted by the Tyranids and can smell their pheromones from an impressive distance. So if a cult did establish itself on a Tau or Kroot world, then the mercenaries would be able to quickly sniff them out and hunt them down. I previously mentioned that there is a healthy assortment of biomass within the Tau Empire. But to be quite honest with you, they only control around 100 worlds, which are so heavily defended that a total invasion might prove to be too risky for the potential gain. Also, the Tau are not on friendly terms with most of the other major factions, so they would not be able to spread through the galaxy to the same scale as the Imperium, essentially confining any Tau cults to existing within a pathetically small region of space. Maybe it would be nice to infest them just for the sake of leading the Tyranid fleets towards the diverse biospheres of the Tau Empire, but it really just feels like a wasted effort. And to be quite honest, the Gene Stealers would be far more successful if dispersed through the Imperium. Thus far, the only Gene Stealer cult recorded to have existed within the Empire would be of the nameless group located upon the sept known as Xim Yen. The story goes that a lone Gene Stealer infiltrated its way upon this world, but was quickly captured by the Tau and sent to an Earth-caste laboratory to be examined and studied. Now, the Tau Empire had only recently learned of the Tyranid menace in the prior century, so at first, they might not have realized that the Gene Stealer was a scouting agent of the Hive Fleets. Nevertheless, one of the scientists was infected by the Gene Stealer, and it didn't take long for a number of mutated hybrids to start emerging from the workers' quarter. The Tau, curious and ignorant as ever, tolerated these hybrids as strange anomalies who should be studied, but also accepted into the local society. This disastrous error resulted in the proliferation of a Gene Stealer cult, and it only took around 2 decades for the entire research district to go silent, necessitating the deployment of the Firecast to investigate. The Tau discovered every facility and every subterranean complex to be infested with chittering gene stealers, sparking a protracted war fought between the malign cult and the cadres of fire warriors. The world was quarantined from the wider empire for around a decade, providing enough time for the Tau to entirely purge the gene stealer menace, restoring order and peace once more. Given the nature of the Tau Empire, I would not be surprised if this event led to the establishment of preventative protocols, assuring that no gene stealer would be able to infiltrate the Tau ever again. Gene stealers, like any tyrannid, operate via the gestalt consciousness of the hive mind. And this vast alien intelligence has determined that within our galaxy, the only perfect hosts to be targeted and infiltrated would be of humanity. The potential gain from establishing a gene stealer cult upon a human world is truly immense and easily outshines that of any other species by such a factor that it really makes sense as to why we don't see all that many cults appearing within the rival factions. The only real reason towards creating a cult upon an Orc world, or perhaps an Eldari craft world, might be to disrupt them. But those resources would certainly be put to better use if deployed upon an Imperial Hive world. There are some factions which are somewhat immune to the spread of a cult, and I did not believe they necessitated an entire chapter's worth of explanation, but these would be of the Necrons and of the forces of Chaos. The robotic Necrons are an entirely cybernetic species, having shed the final vestiges of their biological forms over 60 million years ago, and so naturally they are completely immune to the infection of gene stealer DNA. The brood mind is similarly useless against their undying legions. So we can definitively say that there is no chance for a gene stealer cult to establish itself within a Necron dynasty. With that said, there could be a hypothetical route towards infecting one specific group within a Necron tomb, and these would be the curious abominations known as pariahs. Though we do not often encounter these units, they are essentially a hybridized mix of human biology and Necron technology, boasting the so-called pariah gene, which makes them psychic blanks and entirely immune to the influences of the warp. It's a real stretch to imagine one of these being infected by a gene stealer. And also, since their connection to the warp has been severed, they would be unaffected by the psychic song of the brood mind. So I don't think we should consider this as a valid route towards a cult formation. Maybe a slave population, captured by a domineering dynasty for labor, could be infiltrated to form a cult. But really, tomb worlds contain so little in the way of biomass that again, I think this would be a wasted effort by the tyrannids. For the worshippers of the ruinous powers, their own heretics will often be entirely devoted to the chaos gods, and so it would be quite difficult for a gene stealer to supplant this faith with their own twisted doctrine. The temptations of chaos actually seem to be slightly more potent than that of the tyrannid brood mind, as we have thus far encountered one gene stealer cult which eventually turned rogue and began to favor the darker powers. This cult, known as Tenebris, was aboard a transport vessel, presumably en route to infest a distant world, when they were caught within a warp storm and stranded within the unholy hellscape of Nurgle's pestilent garden. Here, they were afflicted by a terrible plague before being cast back out into reality, now mutated and twisted into vectors of disease who serve only the grandfather and nothing more. As a final point, I'm sure some of you are wondering if a space marine could be infected by a gene stealer. And according to several ancient documents, it does appear that an Astartes may be swayed by a brood lord. It should be pointed out, however, that the main goal of infecting an individual is to use them in producing the next generation of hybrids. And since all of the space marines are sterile, they won't actually be very useful here. We could speculate, however, that a cult-aligned marine might be useful in advancing the plots and schemes of the cult, since most Imperials will be so awestruck by the presence of an Astartes that they will follow their every word to the absolute letter. This would then allow them to perhaps round up groups of citizens under the guise of security, when in actuality they would be led to the cult and converted by the patriarch. However, this all means that we probably won't ever see an Astartes gene stealer hybrid, which really is quite a disappointment. But in any case, with this, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. Thank you all for listening to this sermon on the cults in its entirety. But as I close this chapter once more, I must wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.